evening, everyone, and welcome to Fired Up, the hottest sports show in Central Ohio, the show where four sports fans talk sports for the fans. Our topics for this evening are the fifth major in golf is upon us, the NHL season is winding down, who's skating on thin ice and who's not, the Denver Broncos are moving on from Russell Wilson, the Cleveland Browns trade for a big-time wide receiver, the Mac Jones era in New England is officially over. With that, I give you our assistant chief of our fire brigade, Colton Cow.
Thanks, Matt. We're here again on a Thursday night. Just Matt and I holding down the fort, hoping to get the chief back in next week to talk March Madness. Hard to believe it's already March, and you know March Madness is upon us. So I know it's the chief's favorite topic. It's one of the favorite topics here on the show. So hope to get him back in the studio next week, and you know get him to give his takes and. He's had a long layoff here from the show, so we're, want to see him back in the studio and you know hear his hot takes on you know March Madness.
Yes,
so,
sir.
But like Matt mentioned at the top of the show, going to talk the gentleman's game first. Talk a little golf action. You know, golf's kind of been underway for you know since kind of the start of the year, but this is kind of the big first major tournament. They deem it the fifth major, right, if you will, not officially a major tournament, but what they deem one of the major tournaments, and that's the Players Championship that's taken place. Teed off. You know, most of the golfers teed off today, round one today, and then you know play through Sunday. Matt, what's your thoughts on it so far? Or what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a special anniversary here for the Players Championship. It's the 50th anniversary of the tournament here, kicking off live from TPC Sawgrass in Punta Verde Beach, Florida.
Yeah,
you got some of the favorites or some of the big names who've been out and about lately. Scottie Scheffler, obviously, just won a turn, or he won this last year.
Yeah,
he's going off at 6-1 odds to be a repeat champion. Yeah. He's followed closely by Rory McIlroy, who I believe went off at 12-1 odds. But, you know, not loving the chances for Scottie Scheffler because through the 50 years of this entire tournament, nobody's ever repeated back-to-back.
Yep.
So, you know, I know he's the betting favorite, but history kind of speaks pretty loudly here.
Right,
so
right.
I don't like to see him repeat, and I don't think that's your best money bet here going into Vegas. But some of the guys, the betting experts like, are a little bit longer shots, and guys like Max Homa and Justin Thomas, they've both golfed well on similar courses throughout the years and have put up good efforts at TPC Sawgrass in the past. So
right.
a lot of betting experts like both of those guys. Mm-hmm. And right now, though, looking at who's currently on the leaderboard, you got Xander Schauffele and Rory McIlroy both leading the way currently. Both at 7-under for the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of interesting, you know, that we haven't, you know, I had that written down as well, you know, never a back-to-back winner. It's interesting that they have it because this is, you know, one of the few, you know, tournaments or whatever that they play at the same course every year, you know. So it's one of those things that you would think that, yeah, over time, somebody that's playing it consistently would, you know, we'd have a back-to-back winner having, you know, knowing that we've been here for 50 years, somewhat playing at the same course almost every year.
Well, that's what they say is fun about this course is it's designed for all golfers.
Yeah.
It's got holes that are good for the long ball hitters.
Yeah.
It's got holes that are good for the short ball hitters.
And
so a little bit of everything. It encompasses it all together and it makes it so it's really anybody's game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think why they somewhat deem it the fifth major, you know, the additional major is that, you know, we see the level of competition in this one that we're used to seeing in some of the big majors like the Masters, the U.S. Open, you know, the British Open, because it starts out with 144 players. You know, by the weekend, we're down to, you know, half the field or less than half the field. But of those 144, we got 43 of the top 50 golfers in the world golf rankings that are playing in this thing. So the level of competition is what you would think when it comes to, you know, kind of a major. But, you know, for the most part, you know, looking kind of at the weather, looks like Sunday, maybe, you know, it's got the highest chance of rain at the moment. But other than that, looks like it's going to be, you know, pretty dry, and the weather's, I mean, you can't ask for better weather. Obviously being in Florida, it doesn't get much better than, about low 80s, very low wind. You know, like I said, very, very low chances of rain. But Sunday, almost a 50% chance of rain. But, you know, Florida showers is, you know, rains for 2 minutes and then it's done. Beautiful. So, it'll be pretty ideal, you know, ideal conditions. I think, guys are off to some pretty hot starts, you know, 7 under to start round one is pretty, you know, pretty impressive to start it off. I expect, you know, some lower scores to continue through the, you know, through the weekend and, you know, see who can go the lowest. Obviously that's the key to victory in this one. But, there's some things, you know, that I've kind of highlighted or pointed out, you know, golfers that are going to excel at this course. I think one of the big things for me is maybe not so much off the tee. It's more of kind of the second and third shots, kind of your approach shots after you tee off, just because this course does have a lot of water on it. There are a lot of water hazards, in the mix on this course, the way it's designed. And obviously they have the iconic 17th Island green where it's, you know, completely surrounded by water. So, you know, an opportunity to get in some danger there if you're not, you know, not deadly accurate. That has to be deadly accurate off the tee, considering that's a par three hole. But, I think off, you know, approach shots, you know, second, third shots are, you know, where it's at. I talked about it, you know, staying out of the water, staying in the green grass and not, you know, getting yourself into danger by hitting into the water. But also I think the people that are going to separate themselves in this and go low in this, you know, next 3 days, it's going to come down to the par fives. Mm-hmm. All four of the par fives are under 575 yards, which to an average golfer seems, you know, pretty far, but for these guys, that's nothing.
Couple of shots are there.
And then three out of those four are actually under 540 yards. So, you know, they're pretty shorter par fives considering, you know, some of the longer ones on some of the other courses that they typically play. So there's an opportunity to really score well on these par fives. And I think whoever we see win this thing on Sunday, I think we'll see that they played pretty consistently and did pretty well on those par fives. And that's kind of what may or may not separate them from the rest of the pack. But, I got, you know, a handful of golfers that I, you know, kind of circled or, you know, threw out there as guys to, you know, kind of watch out for, or guys that I think, you know, will be in the mix or, you know, have an opportunity to win this thing. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler, you know, being the number one world ranked golfer, you always got to kind of throw him in the mix and, you know, always a guy that plays pretty consistent golf, you know, and is always in the hunt, you know, going into Sunday. So far through the first round, when I looked up the score, he was 3 under, but he had only, I think he was like through 9 or 10 mm-hmm. holes. So he still had some holes to go, but, you know, 3 under when I saw it. Then the kind of the rest of my guys, it's kind of interesting. Like none of them are even in the top 10 as far as world golf rankings. I threw Shane Lowry out there, the Irishman. He's currently 37th in the world golf rankings. When I was looking at the scores, he was 1 over, but again, still had like 8 or 9 holes still to go. Tony Finau, the 28th ranked golfer in the world. When I looked, he was 2 under for the day, and still had some holes to go. Corey Connors, the 50th world ranked golfer, he was 4 under when I saw it, and still had. I think he only had maybe like 4 or 5 holes to go, but he was at the moment was tied for 7th. And then Keith Mitchell, the other guy that I have circled, 70th world ranked golfer. So outside of Scottie Scheffler, none of the other guys that I kind of think will, you know, be in the mix are, you know, even in the top 10 as far as the world golf rankings go. But Keith Mitchell was 1 under and still had, you know, some holes to go to play. But, you know, I think it's tough to kind of gauge this early on because, like I said, this is kind of the first big tournament that we've had. Like the other tournaments before this, we've seen maybe Scottie Scheffler plays this tournament, but the next tournament he does. But, mm-hmm. you know, the one that Scottie doesn't play, Rory McIlroy. So we haven't seen all of them play on the same course, you know, whatever. So, this is kind of our first, you know, appearance to see, who's who's playing well this early on in the season. Obviously, golf is pretty much a year-long sport. So, you know, we'll see who can put it together early on here, you know, after only having somewhat of a handful of tournaments under their belt. So we'll see who's, you know, hot early on here in the season. But, yeah, going to be great, you know, ideal conditions for golf, going to be, you know, going to be good for all the players. And I think the rain's going to hold off, and, you know, no major wind factor to you know, play into this as well. So I think, you know, going to have some low scores. So right. By Sunday, I think we're going to see some guys in that, you know, upper teens, low 20 under, you know, range.
I just want to see a couple of guys keeping it close and making a battle to the end. That's always when it's most exciting.
And I think also, you know, we mentioned, like I said, the fifth major, this is also one of those tournaments that the purse is much larger compared to all of the kind of non-major tournaments. This is one of the largest, if not the largest, you know, purse that's dispersed, you know, once the dust settles or whatever. So that's kind of another thing that makes it what they deem the fifth major, is because the money is there as far as, you know, who wins this thing, you're going to take home a big chunk. So, all right. Well, moving over from golf, a little bit of gentleman's game to maybe not so much gentleman's game, moving to the ice rink, separates the boys from the men at this point. Going to talk a little bit of hockey. You know, we talked NBA last week about, you know, they're kind of at the three-quarter mark of their season. Well, the NHL's not far behind them, right there behind them. So it's, you know, because they have the same amount of games that they play in the regular season, they're always following each other, or, you know, the playoffs kind of start around the same time for both leagues. So going to talk a little bit of hockey here to keep you up to date on what's been going on the last, you know, quarter of the season since the halfway point. So we'll do kind of our segment that we, you know, kind of pick our favorite to win the Stanley Cup or favorites to win the Stanley Cup, and, you know, talk about best individual player. And then at this point, you know, who's our, you know, hottest team or most surprising team, and then, you know, not so hot or, you know, most disappointing team at this point in the season. So we'll get things started on a good note. Matt, who do you think, Stanley Cup wise, who do you like to, you know, make it or win the whole thing?
Yeah, I'm sticking with the team that I was at the halfway point, and, you know, I got Boston. They're currently 38, 14, and 15. And I like them to be going up against Vancouver in the championship. All who's 42, 17, and 8, currently the best tops in the league. Yeah. So, you know, Vancouver is they're the top shooting percentage team in the league, and they're third in both goals and assists. Yeah. So they're getting it done on the offensive side of things. Their downfall, though, their power play is middle of the road. They're about 11th in the league there.
Yeah.
Where the reason I really like Boston is because they're probably the most well-rounded team in the league. Yeah. They're top eight, top five in almost every category statistically out there. I mean, they do it all well. They play the offense well. They play the defense well.
Right.
I mean, they do a little bit of everything, and I think that's what separates them from everybody else.
Right.
So because of that well-roundedness, I like Boston to win this whole thing.
All right. Well, I'll make it 2-for-2 here. I like the Bruins to win the whole thing as well, you know, for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned. The one thing that does stick out to me that's quite interesting is that, you know, you mentioned Boston's up there, one of the best teams in hockey, you know, as far as record and points go, whatever, but they're averaging about 30 shots a game, which is almost in the bottom third of the league. But as far as goals, but as far as goals scored, they're in the top 10, you know, as far as goals scored per game, or, you know, goals scored on the season. And even more interesting is the defense, you know, as far as goals allowed, they are top 10 in goals allowed, you know, but they're giving up almost 32 shots a game. So it's like they're not, you know, they're not shooting it a ton, but when they do, they make it hurt. But then they give up a lot of shots, but they just have great goalie play at this point. They've you know, figured out, you know, how to, you know, their goalies are playing well, even though they're giving up a lot of shots, they're not letting them, you know, not letting them get past them at this point. So, you know, maybe something to look out for, you know, going forward, maybe something to clean up going forward in the playoffs. You never,
for sure.
The only way you score goals is to put it close to the net at this point. So, you know, if a handful of those shots go a different way, are we talking about Boston, you know, being up there towards the top? You know, sometimes you'd rather be lucky than good sometimes, but, you know, it if there's one thing that maybe, yeah, Boston needs to clean up or could potentially work on going forward, it's yeah, maybe working on the defense, not allowing the guys to get to the goal before that, or, you know, cleaning it up before it gets to the goal. But outside of that, this team looks poised to make a deep run in the playoffs. I like them not only because of, you know, how well they are statistically, but I think compared to maybe some of the other teams that are up there towards the top with Boston, the playoff experience and the playoff depth, leadership, you know, all that, I think maybe separates them from a couple of the other teams that are up there, you know, that they're competing against. So we'll see, like I said, probably about 20, 25 games for each team, you know, remaining before we're talking, you know, NHL playoffs. But so, yeah, still a lot of time, still a lot of, you know, opportunity to you know, make some moves in the standings. So, all right, well, you know, moving on from best individual team or teams, I'm going to move to, you know, best individual player at this three-quarter mark. Matt, I know you've liked the guy from Colorado. What, you still like him at this point?
Still do, yeah. I mean, he's leading the league with 115 points. I mean, he's just blazing. He's got 42 goals to go along with 73 assists.
Yeah.
Guy's doing a little bit of everything. Yep. And his team's currently got the fifth best record in hockey. So he's doing it on a top team.
Yeah.
So I think having both of those really helps.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get that standout player who his team's just not
okay.
I think that always hurts their chances.
Right.
So for him to be doing this on a great team, you know, it's
going a long way,
making it pull away for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've switched my tune because I think at the quarter mark and the halfway mark, I really liked the guy from Tampa Bay and Nikita Kucherov. Well, I'm jumping on the bandwagon now with Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of the things that are hurting Kucherov is that the Tampa Bay's doesn't have a great record. Also at the same time, the plus minus, and I talked about it, you know, at the halfway point. With Nikita Kucherov, his plus minus, I don't know what it is now, but when we talked about it at the halfway point, it was negative at the time, which, you know, plus minus is like your impact when you're on the ice versus your impact when you're off the ice. And if it's negative, that's not good.
Right.
Where Nathan MacKinnon has caught up to, you know, Kucherov in some of those, you know, kind of critical categories, you know, goals, assists, points per game, power play points, all that stuff. But then you go to the record of his team, plus his plus minus is plus 27.
Wow.
You know, it's
phenomenal.
It's pretty good. You know, so for me, yeah, I'm switching tunes, you know, at that three-quarter mark.
Yep.
I think, you know, MacKinnon has overtaken him. You know, I think yeah, just the stats wise, the impact on his team, the team as a whole, their record and where they are position wise in the standings, I think is enough to separate this guy and you know, continue his you know, excellent play so far through three quarters of the season. So we'll see what you know, how the you know, final 20-ish games play out for Nathan MacKinnon, but I like his chances right now.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, then moving over to maybe most surprising team or hottest team at this point, or you know, however you want to interpret that. Matt, what do you think? Who's playing hot, or who's playing well at this point in the season?
Yeah, I went with what I would call a hot team right now, and I went with the Colorado Avalanche just talked about.
Yep,
they're winners of five straight games, and they're leading the league in goals, assists, and they're near the top of the league in most every other category.
Yep.
I mean, they're hitting on all cylinders right now, and if they keep playing this way, they'll definitely give Boston a run for their money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think it was a team that I talked about at the halfway point and a team that I'm going to continue to talk about as kind of my most surprising team, and that's the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that's, like you said, sitting up there towards the top of the NHL standings, not just in their own division, but NHL overall.
Yeah.
And a team that's missed the playoffs the last 3 years. And I think, again, I think I touched on it at the halfway point. This is a team that's improved significantly, mostly on the defensive end, because if you look at the defense so far through the season, they've only given up 180 goals. Last year, they gave up almost 300.
Right.
They're almost half of what they've given up, you know, total wise. At this point, I mean, they rank top 10 as far as goals allowed. They were almost the dead last year as far as goals allowed and goals allowed per game. So I think the difference to me has been, you know, the significant improvement on the defensive end for this Vancouver team. But again, another team that's, again, up towards the top in the rankings, but almost at the bottom as far as shots per game. They make it count. They make it work. They're efficient. When they get a shot on goal, more than likely it's going in. So, you know, I guess maybe that's the key for some of these teams that are up towards the top of the standings is, you know, we're just going to make them count. We may not get a lot of them, but we're going to make them count when we get there. So,
Maybe you just don't need a lot.
Right.
You make them.
Right. Exactly. It just, an interesting thing, you know, between Boston and Vancouver. Yeah. Couple of the teams that are standings wise up towards the top of the league, but you know, shots wise, you know, towards the bottom of the league. But you know, for every team that is hot or, you know, surprising, or, you know, it's surprising to see them up towards the top of the standings, or, you know, doing so well at this point in the season, there's equally amount of teams that are not doing so well or, you know, not hot at this point. And I'll start this one off, and that's for me right now at this point is the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's a team that, you know, we're used to seeing be at least a playoff contender year in and year out. You know, we
typically obviously a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, Stanley Cup contender. And a team that's, you know, won a significant amount of games the last couple of years, but, you know, currently sitting at about 500, 65 points, and they're seventh in their division, just above our hometown Blue Jackets at this point, which, anybody with a pulse, you know, is better than them. But it's not something to be proud of, I guess, at this point. But yeah, towards 25th overall record in the NHL, or, you know, points wise, 25th in the NHL. Just a team that, again, from a defensive standpoint, still playing well defensive wise. Right. It's the offense that has really gone by the wayside. A team that you know, was kind of middle of the road, or a team that we're used to seeing, you know, score a lot of goals. They're almost, you know, dead last in number of goals scored this year, number of goals scored per, you know, average per game. But really the stat that sticks out to me is the power play. They are just under 15% when it comes to the power play, which is 29th out of 32 possible teams in the NHL. But again, it's a tale of two ends on the ice, because if you look at their power play kill percentage, they're almost top five. So it's definitely,
typically if you're killing off the power play, that's great.
Right.
That's
exactly. Right. Right. But when they get in the power play, they're god awful. Right. And again, a trend that's very interesting. You know, we talked about the two teams that are up towards the top of the standings between the Bruins and Vancouver, being towards the bottom as far as shots per game. Well, the Penguins, almost one of the worst teams in the NHL, they're top five in shots per game. So it's a mind game at this point that is baffling to me, that, you know, you would think, hey, the more opportunities we get, the more opportunities we're going to score. Well,
that's always been my motto. Just bling it up the goal.
It'll go in eventually. Yeah. But in this season, I mean, I would have to look at the data to see if that's something that's been trending that way, or, you know, something that historically that's how it's been. But to me, it's very ironic, or very, you know, kind of mystery to that, they are up towards the top as far as shots per game, but one of the worst teams overall in the league as far as record goes. So very, very interesting. But this is a Pittsburgh team that, has a lot more questions than answers at this point. And, you know, I just not something we're used to seeing from this Penguins team.
Absolutely. Well, I'll say you stole my thunder, because I got the same thing, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
All right.
They're currently eight games out of a playoff spot. Yeah. Losers of four straight games in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, they're near the bottom of the league in a ton of categories, which you don't see from this Pittsburgh squad. So, you know, it's very surprising on how badly they've played this year.
Right.
I don't really know what happened either, because they didn't lose a bunch of players or anything like that. They still got Sid the kid.
Right. I mean, at some point,
Sid the old man.
Right.
At this point,
but he's not a kid anymore. Right. You know, and I think that's maybe the problem with the Penguins, is that they may have held on to some of those assets a little bit too long before they, you know, because Father Time always finds a way to win at some point, and it's usually a pretty steep drop off. It's, you know, not like a steady decline. It's usually from one season to the next, the guy goes from being, you know, pretty good or, you know, right, still good to, you know, really, really bad. And I think that's, you know, maybe a little bit of the Penguins' problem is that they, you know, didn't start planning somewhat for the future quick enough.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely not, you know, not what we're used to seeing. And yeah, at this point, yeah, Sid the Kid is no longer Sid the Kid right, at this point, but you know, doing everything he can, you know, to keep the team going, keep the team afloat. But yeah, Pittsburgh definitely in a position that they're not used to being in. We'll see what they decide to do going forward, and you know what it means, you know, when it comes draft time or, you know, off season moves that they make. So we'll see if they can make one last, you know, late playoff push here at this point. But
yeah, I mean, they're still technically in the thing. Right, I mean, they're only 8 games out.
Right,
I
have a wild card spot. Yeah,
anything can happen.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, about, you know, a quarter of the season left to go for these teams. We'll see, you know, who can, you know, improve themselves and, you know, who makes up, you know, who's hot and who's not, you know, going into, you know, playoff time. That's usually the key or recipe for good things come April time when it comes, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs. So, all right, well, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. Stick with us. Going to talk a little bit of football off-season NFL news when we get back.
This podcast is sponsored by Podbean. Podbean is the easiest way to create your own podcast. We use Podbean to host Fired Up. Download the free Podbean podcast app to start, record, and publish your very own podcast in minutes. Podbean provides everything you need to run your podcast, and you can record and publish episodes directly from the app on your phone. Download the free Podbean app today. That's Podbean. Head on over to Podbean at www.podbean.com and use the code PODCAST21 for your first 30 days of podcast hosting for free. Check it out.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. Like I mentioned before the break, going to talk a little bit of NFL offseason moves. So the new calendar year is officially upon us here in the NFL, and you know, some moves that were somewhat made before the calendar became official. But going to start out west. You know, some big news to get, you know, free agency kind of kicked off. Denver Broncos said, "Yeah, the heck with $85 million. We're letting Russell Wilson go out the door here." Yeah. So Denver Broncos decided to move on from 9-time Pro Bowler, you know, Russell Wilson, the QB there. And like I mentioned, let Russell Wilson and $85 million go out the door. Matt, what's your thoughts on this move from the Broncos?
Yeah, I mean, 1 year after signing a 5-year, $245 million extension, Wilson,
gone.
See you later.
Adios.
You know, and what makes this a real hard pill to swallow if you're a Broncos fan is you have a $53 million dead cap hit this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're paying him. Like he's on your team.
Right.
You can't use that cat space.
Right.
It's gone. It's out the window.
Yep.
So you're at a $53 million deficit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, I would have held on to him. I mean,
at least maybe one more year.
Yeah. Something. You gotta do something. That's a lot of money just to be left out there for nobody. It's zero benefit to your roster.
Play.
Where if he's there, he's at least his mind is a bit. You right. get something out
right,
of him.
Right, right.
That is a tough pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. But man, it sure didn't take him long to find his new home, and he ends up signing in Pittsburgh on a 1-year deal, right. league minimum deal,
right.
$1.21 million, which kind of I think he did it to stick it to his former team a little more too, right. because they have to pay the difference in his salary.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Denver's on the hook for $37.79 million
right.
of that salary
right, right.
since he signed that league minimum deal. Yep. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he's hit Denver in every possible way there is to hit that team.
Right. Yeah. I think, very interesting, obviously, you know, a very quick decline in Denver because, you know, this is a Denver Broncos team that made the trade for Russell Wilson, you know, 2 seasons
right.
ago, you know, traded 5 draft picks, 2 first rounders and 2 second rounders.
Man.
And then, you know, another draft pick on top of 3 players to get this guy.
Right.
And everything was hunky dory. You know, you got him. They were saying, oh man, this is the savior has come, you know, this is it. This is the piece that's been missing for this Broncos team. And it just the relationship quickly, you know, went downhill from there.
So this has to turn into one of the worst trades of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Considering what they gave up to get him and now what they're giving up in cap space to sell him to hit the bricks.
Hands down. Yeah, yeah. One of the worst, if not the worst, trade of all time. Obviously, the $85 million that Russell Wilson is due from the Broncos is the largest dead money amount in NFL history by a considerable amount. The next two guys that are on the list, those combined are still less than what Russell Wilson is due over the next two seasons. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah, the Broncos, you know, obviously going to be strapped for cash, you know, and obviously have made some other offseason moves, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, we'll see what this Broncos team can do. We talked about it. Wilson's relationship, the marriage never really worked out.
Right.
Both on the field, off the field, all of that. I mean, in two seasons with Russell Wilson as the starter, they went 11-19. They missed the playoffs both seasons that he was at the helm.
But you look at his stats, they weren't that bad.
Right, they weren't horrible. But you do look at it and you say, in those two seasons, Russell Wilson played for three different head coaches as well. Started off with Nathaniel Hackett, first time head coach. Got fired midway, didn't even make it through one season, got fired midway through, had an interim for the last, handful of games. That guy didn't wind up getting the head coaching job anyways.
Right.
And then they bring in Sean Payton, and, we all know what the relationship between, Russell Wilson and Sean Payton was. Never really, blossomed into, what we thought it could when Sean Payton, had such a great relationship or had such a great run there with Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the same, situation, or just didn't work out that way. This all kind of got started, or we probably saw the handwriting on the wall, about the midway point here in this, this past NFL season. During the week 9 bye that the Broncos had, Wilson, his representatives in Denver all got together, and the Broncos, I think, had buyer's remorse at that point, because they were basically trying to figure out, how do we get out of paying Russell Wilson this $37 million guaranteed if he gets injured? Even if he would have gotten injured, never played another down of football, the dude was still due $37 million. And the Broncos were trying to, somewhat strong arm Russell Wilson and his team into, hey, let's, can we waive this? Can we lower this amount of money?
Right.
And, of course, Russell Wilson and his crew are like, no, I'm not. Right.
Why
would I do that? And basically the Broncos, like, ultimatum at that point was like, okay, if you don't reduce it, we're not going to play you. You're not going to be the starter here in Denver, which, again, maybe borderline, I don't know, maybe some weird HR, illegal, unethical stuff. But anyways, It didn't play out the way the Broncos did. They let, Russell Wilson play for another handful of games before they, pulled the plug and, whatever. But we probably knew that the relationship then was somewhat rocky, was not headed in the right direction. And, to me, $85 million is a lot just to let walk out the door. It probably was going to be tough for them to trade him at this point, for anybody to take on large of a contract. So, they were stuck. But to me, it's tough to see a pro bowler like Russell Wilson, a guy that you somehow could have gotten some draft picks out of. Yeah. You probably wouldn't have recouped the draft picks you got to get him. But to see $85 million just walk out the door, and it's tough pill to swallow. Like you mentioned, headed now, Russell Wilson, clean slate, new city, new location, headed to Pittsburgh. I mean, still no guarantee that he's going to be the starter in Pittsburgh.
What could make matters even worse for Denver is they play each other.
Oh, yeah, year. Right. Yes, yeah, I was going to mention that. But, there is Pittsburgh, on their schedule this season. They do have a game against Denver. So it will be – and I believe it's in Denver. So it's going to be I can imagine the Boo Birds will definitely be out when that game does occur, especially if Wilson is the starter, is starting during that game. But I mentioned, still no guarantee of that. You know, obviously Pittsburgh, just a handful, you know, a couple of seasons ago, you know, used a first round pick to draft Kenny Pickett, you know, the quarterback out of the University of Pittsburgh. You know, it's been kind of an up and down roller coaster ride for Kenny Pickett. He showed some flashes, but, you know, not maybe the significant improvement that we would want to see at year three for this guy. So it's going to be a battle. I don't think, again, that Russell Wilson is guaranteed the starting position. I think
and that's what's nice about it being a $1 million contract. Right. I mean, they can play whoever they want.
Right, exactly.
They're not really out anything if it doesn't work out for them.
Obviously, Pickett's still on his rookie deal, so not getting a ton of money himself. And, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, getting somewhat of like the veteran league minimum or whatever. So it's, they're in a pretty decent situation as far as pay goes in that. But, you know, in a conundrum that, if neither one of them are any, you know, are able to pan out or whatever, Pittsburgh's right back to, you know, where they started trying to find out who's going to be their next, you know, franchise QB that they've been looking for since Big Ben, you know, hung it up. So we'll be interesting to see what you know, Denver and Denver has no QB on their roster either. So it you know, but they have somewhat of a higher draft pick, or, you know, they're not quite top 10, but they're, you know, just on the outside of the top 10. And with as many QBs as there are in this year's draft class, there's, you know, still an opportunity to get one. It may not be, you know, the top tier guy or what the experts are deeming, you know,
or even McCarthy.
Right. Exactly. So they have the opportunity to possibly get their guy at this point. But they have no answer at QB at the moment. We'll see what they decide to do, you know, come April, you know, when the draft does roll around. But I imagine they're going QB at this point. So, continuing on with the Broncos, the yard sale continues for this Denver Broncos team.
At least they got something on this one.
They got something out of this one. But the Cleveland Browns adding, you know, the wide receiver Jerry Jeudy from the Denver Broncos to the mix. You know, another weapon to add to this, you know, Cleveland Browns offense that already includes, you know, Pro Bowl wide receiver Amari Cooper and Pro Bowl tight end David Njoku. You know, Jerry Jeudy getting added to the mix. So the Browns get Jerry Jeudy. The Denver Broncos got a 2024 fifth round pick and a 2024 sixth round pick out of the deal. Matt, what's your thoughts on this deal between Cleveland and Denver?
I mean, I think it's a low risk to no risk for Cleveland, a fifth and sixth rounder. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're getting a guy with
potential. I
mean, Jeudy has all the potential in the world. He was a first round, number 15th overall draft pick in the 2020 NFL
and
draft.
And a beast in college.
I mean, almost unstoppable, you know. Right. I mean, people just couldn't slow him down. Alabama,
yeah. I mean, pair him up with Amari Cooper, also an Alabama wide receiver. So
they're going to get some love there from the Bama fans. Right. And I'll tell you what, though. I mean, his career, though,
he hasn't done much.
He's played in 57 games, started 44 of them, only had 211 catches in those 44 games for a little over 3,000 yards, 11 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So not what anybody thought they were getting out of him.
Right.
But, you know, I still think just getting a fifth and a sixth round
I think they
probably could have done a little better, I mean, not much for a guy that had all the talent and all the promise in the world.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Obviously, the QB situation in Denver has been a revolving door since Peyton Manning, you know, walked out the door. It's never been the same for Denver. And, you know,
could make all the difference in the world.
Right. Obviously, if they can keep Deshaun Watson healthy in Cleveland, then, you know, at this point, there's no excuses. Yeah. There are no excuses for this Cleveland Browns, at least from an offensive standpoint.
And now we know it's Watson because there's no more Flacco.
Flacco as well. So this is Watson's year. He's got to stay healthy. Yeah. And if he can, this Cleveland Browns offense can be dangerous. I mean, if they get Nick Chubb back, obviously coming off of, you know, a pretty gruesome leg injury, but you know, a guy that has battled through a gruesome leg injury before. A guy that I think will be back. I don't know what the timetable looks like, if he'll be ready, you know, week one per se, but, you know, the Browns still have a great offensive line. I mean, this team is built to win, and adding a guy that has the potential like Jerry Jeudy and having finally a QB that is, you know, can throw the ball and is competent at times,
He's got a dynamic duo now. Right, he can be right. bracketed with
right.
Cooper.
Right, exactly.
You know, neither of them. Who do you pick?
Exactly. Do you go after? Yeah, yep. Watch, so. Yeah. And then, like I said, throw in the mix with David Njoku, the tight end. You know, big target there. And on top of that, they, you know, the Browns traded last year for Elijah Moore. You know, the big target from the Jets, who again, kind of an up and down role, was a great player in college. Never really worked out in New York, but of course, New York hasn't had a quarterback either. So, you know, coming to Cleveland, having those guys, I mean, this is going to be a dangerous Browns team from an offensive perspective. If, you know, they're able to keep that defense was obviously pretty good, or, you know, really, really good last year. If they're able to keep all those pieces together, this could be a good Browns team in a competitive division in the AFC North, and, you know, something that they're going to.
Really, I think this division's quietly become maybe the premier division in all of football this offseason with the moves that have been made.
Absolutely. You know, and we're highlighting just a couple of things that have happened. Yeah. Obviously, there have been over the last week and several days a lot of people here, people there, people everywhere. And we'll touch on that, you know, next week or whatever. But just want to kind of highlight it, you know, a couple of big moves that kind of happened before before all the craziness really got started. So we will definitely, you know, touch on, you know, who we think so far early on in this NFL offseason, who we think, you know, kind of won, who really helped themselves and who really kind of hurt themselves so far through the offseason. But just wanted to touch on, you know, a couple of highlights here, a couple of guys that, you know, made some moves early on in kind of the offseason here. Yep. Well, moving then to our last move, kind of last topic for the evening. The Mac Jones era in New England officially done at this point. Another trade between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New England Patriots. Jacksonville receives, you know, QB Mac Jones. The Patriots get a 2024 sixth-round pick out of the guy. Matt, what's your thoughts on this move, you know, for both teams?
I mean, I think Mac Jones needed a fresh start, but I'm not sure this is exactly what he wanted,
because
he's got zero chance of being the starter out there.
Absolutely.
It's not even going to be a competition. he's got no availability for that. But, you know, I think the Pats getting anything out of him with the way he's regressed the last few years, I guess getting a six-rounder is better than letting him walk for nothing. Right. But I don't think anybody walks away from this happy. You know, but you got to kind of feel for Mac Jones too, because he had a promising rookie season.
Oh yeah.
Then his offensive coordinator leaves to take a head coaching job in Oakland.
Yep.
And then
Josh McDaniels.
Then they hire a defensive minded guy to call
the
plays.
A long time defensive minded guy.
So I mean, of course you're going to see regression when you got the wrong guy talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know. So I can understand why he kind of went backwards, and then, you know, this year they bring in the third offensive guy he's had in 3 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least it was one with some offensive play calling abilities, but he couldn't get it rolling again. Once the train came off the rails, there was no getting it back. You know, but overall, Jones was 18-24 in his time as a starter. He threw for almost 9,000 yards, 46 touchdowns, 36 interceptions.
I
mean, he's better than a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio.
Right.
I mean, I think he will be a serviceable backup quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, even if he doesn't stick in Jacksonville for a while, I think he's going to have a career in the league as a backup for quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, at this point, he probably has more competition at being the backup, you know, because Jacksonville does have C.J. Beathard on the roster at the moment, as you know, and it was Trevor Lawrence's backup last year, and obviously hasn't gotten a ton of time to play. But it's always, you know, in the NFL, with as gruesome of a game, or you know, you're always one injury away from being the guy, and so anything can happen. You know, Trevor Lawrence, obviously, you know, one of the better QBs in the league, but again, one injury away from going down, and somebody else having to step in, and definitely Mac Jones can show, hey man, put everything behind me in New England. It wasn't me. It was, you know, the mix, the craziness that I was in New England.
Right.
I have the potential. I have the talent to do it. Yeah. Again, maybe it won't be in Jacksonville, but he may be playing for his career as a starter going forward. If that opportunity does come in Jacksonville for him to play, you know, you go out there and you show what you got. Yeah. You may not be on Jacksonville's roster, but you know, everybody's always in the need for either a backup QB or a starting QB. And if you can flash some potential, you know, crazy things can happen.
Well, I mean, look at Sam Darnold. It's worked out for him right now.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. To be honest, I thought the guy would be out of the league at this point because at this point
he might be the starter.
it's crazy to see how, you know, the QB door and, you know, the QB carousel continues in the NFL. But definitely, like I said, you know, Mac Jones has the opportunity to show New England was a mistake. You know, it just wasn't the right situation, whatever. I mean, yeah, your heart goes out to the guy because New England did nothing to
surround him with
develop
anything.
The guy. Yeah. You know, like you mentioned, having a defensive-minded guy who's been with the Patriots in the past and been the defensive coordinator and been a phenomenal defensive coordinator, all of a sudden, let's make him call some plays. That makes total sense. And for Bill Belichick, you know, a first ballot Hall of one of the greatest coaches of all time
To make that call,
You know, is beyond baffling at this point. And, you know, so it's like, what did you really expect at that point? And, you know, on top of that, during that same season, a guy that's been a longtime special teams coach, they named the quarterback's coach. So it's like, you know, the perfect storm, if you will,
of regression.
Yeah. And it's mind-blowing because it's like, I don't think you could have you could have played out this story 10 times out of 10.
Right.
And I think it would have played out the exact same way every single time. I don't think that in any storyline, any alternate universe, all of these events would have happened that Mac Jones would have turned into a Hall of Fame QB or, you know, a franchise QB because
Tom Brady would have regressed.
I think, Tom Brady would have had a hard time considering the personnel moves. Yeah. And on top of that, you know, Bill Belichick obviously has never been a guy that's been one to go out in free agency and sign top free agents or go for the top guys in the NFL draft or anything like that. So I think, again, just a perfect storm of play, or, you know, coaching personnel as well as, you know, not really surrounding him with anything to really work with. I think was just it was a bad situation. But let's move on. You know, you have a chance to prove them wrong at this point.
Right.
Go out there and make the best of it. You know, a guy that Mac Jones did grow up in Jacksonville, so somewhat of a hometown kid, or, you know, playing in front of a hometown crowd. And again, may hear his name called at some point because, again, Trevor Lawrence, you know, opportunity is always there. One injury away from getting the opportunity to start and make the most of it.
It's pretty easy to see what the Patriots are going to be doing with number three overall. They're either going Daniels, May, or Williams.
They're going somewhere, right? Yeah. They're going QB. I mean, maybe not, because again, if there is a new regime in there, obviously, you know, Bill Belichick no longer the head coach, but
Belichick would have traded it for like 30 more late round draft picks.
Exactly. So we'll see, you know, obviously Jerod Mayo, a player under Belichick, and, you know, a guy that has spent some time around Belichick. We'll see if he makes his own path and, you know, decides to do his own thing. But yeah, smart money would say that at the third pick, they would be taking a QB to, you know, fill the spot and, you know, try to find their next franchise guy. But, you know, stranger things have happened at this point in sports. So we'll see what happens in late April, what the New England Patriots decide. But yeah, Jacksonville, again, you always need a serviceable backup as well. You know, that's almost become just as important as having a franchise quarterback. We saw,
if you're down a game, you got to have somebody who can step in and win you a game or two.
Right. Look at the Browns. It took them four before they finally got a guy that, you know, was able to go in there a guy that was in retirement pretty much. And they, you know, got him out there and look what he did. So sometimes, it helps to have a serviceable third, fourth, fifth string possibly if you need it. But I think Mac Jones has the tools, a big kid, you know, strong arm.
Right.
I think he has the opportunity. We'll just see, you know, what he's able to do in Jacksonville with the limited reps that he probably is going to get. We'll see if, he's able to, you know, kind of show some of his talents, or, you know, kind of put New England behind him at this point and move on and see if he can carve out a niche here in the NFL.
For sure.
All right. Well, that's it for our show. So thanks for listening to Fired Up with your hosts, Colton Cowell,
Matt Cordes.
We hope you enjoyed our episode this week. And, you know, if you want to hear other topics or future episodes, or, you know, you just got a burning sports question you want to hear us talk about on the show, feel free to reach out to us on our different social medias. We do have an Instagram. If you look for @FiredUp_podcast, or if you search over on Facebook on Fired Up, Sports Podcast, you can find our page there. And, you know, speaking about our social medias, we will, you know, we do it every year. It's back this year. We'll be doing our, you know, bracket challenge. We give prizes away to first, second, and third, free to enter, right. You know, no money involved. Obviously know nothing about basketball. You know, I've never watched an ounce of college basketball.
Have some fun.
Get in the mix. You know, see how you stack up against what we deem ourselves, the experts. And you know, it's always a good time. March Madness, always a fun, you know, fun time. I love it. I can't think of anything better than, you know, those first couple of days when there's
nonstop basketball.
When there's like five games on at the same time. Yeah. Like it that to me, there's nothing better than it. So get in that, you know, look on our social medias. You can find the link and find all the information about how to get into that, you know, get into our group for our bracket challenge. Love to have you there. It's always a good time. But you can also head over to our website at www.firedup1.podbean.com, where you can find all of our past episodes, you know, and a little bit of information about the show, as well as you can find this show, all of our past episodes on pretty much any podcast platform you can think of: Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. So all the big players, you can find our show. So we appreciate y'all listening. And as always,
stay fired up.